Cohen of Trinity by Amy Levy. The news of poor Cohen's death came to me both as a shock and a surprise. It is true that in his melodramatic, self-conscious fashion, he had often declared a taste for suicide to be among the characteristics of his versatile race. And indeed, in the Cambridge days, or in that obscure interval which elapsed between the termination of his unfortunate university career and the publication of Gubernator, there would have been nothing astonishing in such an act on his part. But now, when his book was in everyone's hands, his name on everyone's lips, when that recognition for which he had longed was so completely his, that success for which he had thirsted was poured out for him in so generous a draught, to turn away, to vanish without a word of explanation. He was so fond of explaining himself. Is the very last thing one would have expected of him. 1. He came across the meadows towards the sunset, his upturned face pushed forwards, catching the light, and glowing also with another radiance than the rich, reflected glory of the heavens. A curious figure, slight, ungainly, shoulders in the ears, an awkward, rapid gait, half slouch, half hobble, one arm with its coarse hand swung like a bell rope as he went. The other pressed a book close against his side, while the hand belonging to it held a few bulrushes and marsh marigolds. Behind him streamed his shabby gown. It was a glorious afternoon of May, and his dusty trencher cap pushed to the back of his head revealed clearly the oval contour of the face, the full prominent lips, full prominent eyes, and the curved beak of the nose with its restless nostrils. "Who is he?" I asked of my companion, one of the younger dons. "Cohen of Trinity." He shook his head. The man had come up on a scholarship, but had entirely failed to follow up this preliminary distinction. He was no good, no good at all. He was idle, he was incompetent. He led a bad life in a bad set. We passed on to other subjects, and out of sight passed the uncouth figure with the glowing face, the evil reputation, and that strange suggestion of latent force which clung to him. The next time I saw Cohen was a few days later in Trinity Quad. There were 3 or 4 men with him, Little Cleaver of Sydney, and others of the same pattern. He was yelling and shrieking with laughter at some joke of his own, apparently, and his companions were joining in the merriment. Something in his attitude suggested that he was the ruling spirit of the group, that he was indeed enjoying the delights of addressing an audience, and appreciated to the full the advantages of the situation. I came across him next morning, hanging moodily over King's Bridge, a striking contrast to the exuberant figure of yesterday. He looked yellow and flaccid as a sucked lemon, and eyed the water flowing between the bridges with a suicidal air that its notorious shallowness made ridiculous. Little Cleaver came up to him and threw out a suggestion of lecture. Cohen turned round with a self-conscious, sham tragedy air, gave a great guffaw, and roared out by way of answer the quotation from Tom Cobb. "The world's a beast, and I hate it.